Welcome to Honor Your Boundaries, Episode 76 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owiegon. Many people, myself included for a long time, allow things into their life that they don't really want there, and find that people often take advantage of them, treat them in disrespectful and inappropriate ways, and disregard their needs. Conflict inevitably results, whether it is internal conflict within the person being treated in these ways because they don't know how to make it stop, or because when they try to instigate a change in that dynamic, they're met with harsh resistance and drama from the other person or people in that dynamic. This happens to both men and women. Episode 20 of this podcast was titled, Your Boundaries Create Your Reality. In that episode, I spoke about the power of defining, articulating, and enforcing our boundaries as important tools in conflict prevention. If after listening to today's episode, you're wondering if there are boundaries you need to set in your life and how to do that, you may find it useful to go back and listen to episode 20 to get some ideas for that. After airing that episode, I received several letters from listeners. One of them was a woman in California who had never heard of the concept of personal boundaries and recognized that much of the unhappiness in her life was because, in the absence of boundaries, she let other people rule her life. Over the little more than a year since, I have heard from her several times, and today, with her permission, I'd like to share some of our exchanges with you. I think we can all see something of ourselves or people close to us in the situations she has experienced that involved her boundaries or the lack thereof. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Brené Brown. Daring to have boundaries is about having the courage to love yourself even when we risk disappointing others. Many of us are taught from an early age that we don't have boundaries. Sometimes this is intentional. More often, it is unintentional, stemming from the things that adults do to children without recognizing the message their actions are sending, such as walking into a child's room without knocking, not allowing their child to say no once in a while when they don't want to do something and it's important to them, or not being willing to negotiate with their child to arrive at a mutually agreeable decision. In some families, every boundary that is imposed is rigid and non-negotiable. This can inadvertently teach children that they are not allowed to have boundaries of their own. We find this useful as parents because it reinforces our sense of authority and we get less resistance from our children, but we have to be mindful that if they enter their independent adult life with the mindset that they're not allowed to have boundaries of their own, they could be overcompliant and very likely to be taken advantage of or even abused. Conversely, parents sometimes unintentionally teach their children that there are no boundaries by not setting enough boundaries for their child. It might be that no curfew or bedtime is set. There are no limitations on what they eat or how much, or there are no defined rules for behavior towards others, and so on. Some parents have philosophies behind the boundaries they do or do not set for their children. Some parents are in survival mode and winging it, making boundary decisions as they go along, and some parents don't have boundaries in their frame of reference. It's a fine balance we as parents have to achieve, because having too many rigidly held boundaries and not allowing our child to set any boundaries for themselves prevents them from developing that skill as they become adults, whereas not setting any boundaries for them doesn't give them any experience in honoring other people's boundaries. In the case of Linda, the listener whose letters I'll tell you about, her mother had been raised by extremely strict parents, a Southern Baptist minister, and his very docile wife. Linda's mother knew nothing about having personal boundaries, so she was unable to teach Linda about boundaries, much less model for Linda how to have boundaries and how to hold them. In Linda's first letter to me, she wrote about her boyfriend of more than 15 years, who she described as an alcoholic pothead, telling me that he begins drinking beer and smoking pot in the morning and continues that way until he goes to bed late at night. He works irregularly and spends a lot of money on beer and pot and is therefore unable to pay his bills. He often begged or borrowed money from her, but had never paid back any of the money she'd loaned him. He would occasionally start some project on her house in an apparent effort to pay her back, but he rarely finished them, and when he did, he'd ask her to pay him something for completing the job. Even though she resented it, she usually gave him whatever money he asked for because she felt sorry for him because of his difficult childhood and his struggles as an adult, and it was easier than dealing with his anger when she tried to say no. Linda lived with her mother at the time as a live-in caregiver. Her boyfriend wanted to move in with them, saying it would be good for them to have a man in the house. Linda said she had a bad feeling about that idea, but was thinking about letting him move in anyway because she knew it would be a better situation for her boyfriend than the one he was in. After listening to me talk about boundaries in episode 20, Linda emailed me to ask what I would suggest as boundaries for her to set if she decided to let him move in. In my reply, I commended her for recognizing that boundaries would be vital in this situation, but told her that it was important for her to identify and define her boundaries for herself. Otherwise, she would likely not be as invested in holding them. I also believe that defining our own boundaries is part of getting our power back, and asking someone else to do that for us, even someone whose advice we respect, is giving up our power to someone else. She was frustrated with me for answering that way and reiterated that she needed my help with this. I commended her for asserting that with me and told her that I was modeling for her how to hold a boundary and that I felt that only she could know best what boundaries she needed, so I wasn't comfortable telling her what her boundaries should be. I told her I would help her, but I wouldn't define her boundaries for her. Thinking about boundaries overall, not just the ones that she would need to put in place if she were to let her boyfriend move in, I suggested that she first identify what her values are, what's most important to her in her life and in her relationships, then to use those values to define what she does and does not want in her life. I propose that she make a list of those things and use them to help her define her boundaries. Once she defined her boundaries, her next step would be to figure out how she would articulate those boundaries to others. I suggested that she listen to episode 2 of this podcast about conscious communication to get some ideas about how to structure a boundaries conversation. Linda followed that advice and identified some of her boundaries and then tried to share those with her boyfriend in a negotiation about him moving in. He wasn't willing to agree to the boundaries about not drinking during the day or smoking pot in the house, so she didn't allow him to move in. Although there was some conflict and drama around that, she was able to hold her ground. That felt like a great accomplishment to both of us. I didn't hear from Linda for a while after that. Several months later, she wrote me again. Her mother had passed away, and her boyfriend had renewed his efforts to move in with her, pointing out to her how lonely and vulnerable she was now that she was living alone in the house. Linda managed to hold her boundary and did not let him move in. Her courage bolstered by that success, the next time her boyfriend asked her for money, she said no, and that he needed to figure out how to pay his own bills without mooching from others. They had a big fight about that, but again, she held her boundary. Her boundary tests did not end there. During a subsequent visit when she was in another room, her boyfriend wrote a check to himself in her checkbook and forged her signature on it. The bank cashed it. She learned about it when she tried to use her debit card and there weren't enough funds in her account because there was over $1,000 less in her account than she thought. She didn't report the forgery because she didn't want to get her boyfriend in trouble with the law and make his life harder than it already was. She also told me that she saw no point in telling him he had to pay it back because she knew he never could or would. At this point, I felt the need to do some reflecting back to her of what I was understanding from her and to ask her some open-ended clarifying questions in the hope that I could help her get some clarity on the situation and to understand more about her boundaries and holding them. When I wrote back to her, I said, "So it sounds like when all was said and done that it really was okay with you that he forged one of your checks for over $1,000. What was it that made that okay? How did that fit in with your boundaries?" At that point, Linda made an appointment to speak with me. Emailing back and forth was no longer sufficient for her. In our conversation, Linda told me that my reflection had made her angry. Why on earth would I think that she would be okay with him forging a check and for such a large amount? I replied that there being no repercussions for her boyfriend or even a request to pay back the stolen money was sending a clear message that it was okay to do what he did. If we don't hold our boundaries, we are communicating to others that our boundaries mean nothing. Therefore, if we do state a boundary, it can be ignored and other people can do whatever they want to us. In my view, this also clearly communicates to others that we don't respect ourselves enough to have and hold boundaries, which usually diminishes other people's respect for us. I want to pause here for a moment and ask you, dear listeners, to reflect for a minute on your thoughts and emotional responses to Linda's story. What do you notice? Are you judging Linda and her choices? Are you relating to Linda, her situation, and her choices? If you're feeling inclined to judge, I encourage you to step out of your inner judge, because that will limit your ability to empathize and to learn from her experience. Whether you're judging her, relating to her, or perhaps a bit of both, consider, what would your boundaries be? How would you hold your boundaries if you were in her situation? How would you define and articulate them in order to hold them in the way that you need to? These are important questions that we all must ask ourselves, because if we don't get clear on our boundaries, plan how we will articulate them, and how we will hold them, it makes it much more difficult to pass the boundary tests that will come our way in life. Of all the lessons and tests that we will have in our lifetime, it seems that boundaries is a context in which there will be lessons and tests for all of our days. The more we study those lessons, prepare for those tests, and learn from the parts of the tests that don't go well for us, the easier it will be for us when the next one comes around. If we don't pay attention and learn from these past experiences, the next test might be even harder. Here's what happened for Linda. Recently, a man she had known in high school posted on the Facebook page for their high school class that he needed a place to stay while he got back on his feet. He offered to pay rent for a room in someone's house for a couple of months. Linda, acting on her compassion and without forethought, impulsively replied that she had an extra room. Of course, after reading Linda's reply, this man, I'll call him Larry, contacted her right away to begin the process of moving in. Realizing that she might be acting too impulsively and that if she was going to move forward with this, she was going to have to set some boundaries, Linda reached out to me before responding to Larry again. I suggested that the first thing she needed to do was to step out of her impulsive, compassionate self and step into her neutral observer self and really look at and analyze the situation. I suggested that she write a list of questions to ask herself and a list of questions to ask him. Among the questions I suggested she ask herself were, what do I know about this person? How well do I know this person? When I suggested this question, she immediately responded, well, he was a year ahead of me in high school, but we hung out together, and that was back in the 80s, so I've known him 40 years. I said, okay, that's a long time. When was the last time you saw him? She said that the year they hung out together was her junior year and his senior year. Then he graduated, and they lost contact with each other. I reflected back to her, so you knew each other for 1 year 39 years ago. What do you know about him now? She agreed that she didn't really know anything about him now, but she did know that he came from a wealthy family, what she called a good family. Going back to the questions I proposed, she asked herself, I suggested asking herself, what are my expectations of this situation? What are my expectations of this person? If he were to move in with me, what are my terms? How long, in exchange for what, etc.? What are my boundaries? How will I articulate them? How will I hold and enforce them? If it doesn't work out or I feel it's time for him to go, how will I do that? I suggested she give careful thought to the answers to each of these questions, to the questions she would ask him, and to the answers she needed to hear in order to be comfortable with him moving into her home. I suggested that she write down the questions she wanted to ask him and the answers he gave so that she wouldn't forget them. I proposed she put her boundaries and expectations in writing so that she would stay clear on them and so that she could give him a copy to give some thought to. I told her I thought it was very important that they have multiple face-to-face conversations and learn more about each other and what each of them expected from a house-sharing situation. I also suggested that they write out a rental agreement with as many of these details as they could think of and with caveats for if the agreement didn't work out as planned or wasn't followed as written. Linda took my advice, met with Larry a couple of times before he moved in, and negotiated a detailed rental agreement with him, which they both signed. Linda told her boyfriend about the situation, and although he wasn't happy about it, he accepted it and understood that it was different from when he had asked to move in because he hadn't offered to pay any rent. Linda told him that she had a clear boundary, that there would be no intimacy with Larry. It was strictly a house-sharing situation for a couple of months while Larry got back on his feet. Larry moved in April 1st. Everything seemed to be going well for the first month, although by the middle of April, Linda and Larry had become intimate. That gave Linda the impetus she needed to break up with her boyfriend, which she said she'd been wanting to do for a long time, but had never found the strength to do. Linda was keeping me apprised by email of how her situation was going. I did tell her to be mindful of the fact that she had already let go of one of her boundaries, that of not being intimate with Larry, and to be careful didn't set a precedent of her boundaries not being real. She agreed that was a concern, especially in light of the fact that Larry wasn't able to pay all of his rent for May. Unfortunately, Larry wasn't able to pay any rent for June and July, and Linda is now completely supporting him. She doesn't feel as though she can ask him to move out now that he's completely broke and feels as though she would be responsible for making him homeless if she were to do that. Linda also continues to give money to her ex-boyfriend in response to his pleas for help and to ease her guilt for having broken up with him when he needs her so badly. In what I see to be her excessive, potentially self-destructive compassion, Linda has completely lost sight of her boundaries and her will to put her own needs before those of others. She has become entrenched with two people who appear to be striving mightily to keep her believing that she is responsible for meeting their needs while putting no effort into taking responsibility for their own lives. The lessons and tests that Linda's experiencing or something similar, the lessons and tests that Linda's experiencing or something similar could happen to any of us in one context or another, whether it's with a family member, maybe even an adult child of ours, a coworker, a friend, a partner, even someone we meet online. When we aren't clear on our boundaries, clear and direct in our articulation of our boundaries, and consistent in holding and enforcing our boundaries, we tell the world that we have no boundaries, that we don't respect our own needs, and that they can do their will with us with no consequence. Obviously, this doesn't support our well-being. And truly, it's not beneficial for the other person, although we may think it is, and they certainly do. We're actually doing them a disservice too, because we're giving them the message. We're teaching them that it's okay to take advantage of another person, to disrespect their boundaries, and to ignore their needs. We're teaching them something that is not true. I encourage each and every one of you, if you haven't done so already, to take the time to identify your values. Use that information to determine what you do and do not want in your life. And with that as a foundation, clearly identify your boundaries for your behavior and for others. What is acceptable and unacceptable in how you show up in life and how other people show up in your world? Once that's clear for you, plan and practice how you'll talk about that. Visualize yourself having conversations with others about values and boundaries, not just yours, of course, theirs as well. Remember that no matter how long or well someone knows you, you can't expect them to be psychic about your boundaries and vice versa. It's an important conversation to have with everyone in your life. Since people often cross boundaries they didn't recognize were there, giving people foreknowledge of your boundaries will reduce the chances that will happen and the conflict that could result. It doesn't have to be a heavy, hyper-serious conversation. As an example, I often say to people, I work very hard and give a lot of energy to others all day long, so I hold 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. as time for myself, and I don't answer the phone. So I don't make the boundary that they can't call, because it won't bother me if they do, I just won't answer, and I've made that clear. If that seems to bother them, I suggest they leave a message if they feel the need to call during those hours, and I'll call them the next day, or they can send me an email, which I'll respond to the next day. I'm giving them options, and I'm holding my boundaries for my own self-nurturing and well-being. Once you have a sense of how you'll articulate your boundaries, plan and visualize how you will hold a boundary if someone breaches it. What will be your goal for that conversation? What words, tone of voice, body language, and demeanor will you use? How negotiable are you willing to be about your boundaries? Many of us have some boundaries that are completely non-negotiable and others that we are negotiable on to varying degrees. Get clear on that too. Defining our boundaries, being clear with others on what our boundaries are, and being strong in holding our boundaries are acts of love for ourselves and wisdom lessons for others. I hope each and every one of you will remember that and honor your boundaries accordingly. If you're enjoying co-creating peace, there are so many ways to help this podcast stay strong and live long. Choose one. Choose several, and know that I am deeply grateful for your support in any form. Subscribe to Co-Creating Peace on your favorite podcast provider. Subscriptions improve podcast rankings. Share Co-Creating Peace with people in your life. Share the show on your platforms, tell your friends about it, and give Co-Creating Peace a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Your sponsorship will go toward the production expenses of this podcast. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. Contribute to the content of this podcast by sending me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. You can get a free 30-minute communication coaching session simply by coming on the show to talk about a communication challenge you're having. We can change the names of all involved, including you, to protect everyone's privacy. Trust me, any challenge you're having, others out there in the audience are also having. So you'll be helping them by working through your communication challenge with me. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please send those to me too. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON at bridgesofpeace.com. I love hearing from my listeners, and I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.